Hello and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. A little bit of chaos going on. Not really the news. Kind of a weird, quiet news day aside from the possibility of World War III. Nothing big, nothing to worry about. But anyway, I'm John DeRola. And on Tuesdays, we have a special treat for you. And that treat returns once again. Senator Nina Turner, how's it going?
It's going, John. Oh my God. Nothing too much, but the possibility of WW3. What a you're never gonna be able to top that opening.
No, I don't want to. I really, really don't want to. Well, I mean, I guess like, you know, an actual progressive becoming president, that would be the leadoff story for like 6 months on the show. Not there'd be nothing new about it. It would just be that it had actually happened, but we're gonna have to wait.
Agreed.
And hopefully get to that. But anyway, we've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about with Nina today, including a roundup of a number of different stories involving the exploitation of workers in areas as disparate as people who are just a few years shy of retirement, struggling to find work, people working to get the Super Bowl ready, not far from where we're filming, and a little bit of good news in that area, yet more unionization efforts that have succeeded, gonna improve the financial state of thousands of workers. So some good stuff there, and we've got some CRT nonsense and an interesting change of endorsement by a newspaper that's involving a candidate who many in our audience will be very familiar with. And then in the last half hour, when I'm gonna be rolling solo, we've got some nonsense involving a new ending to Fight Club made specifically for China. What's that about? And the hawking of NFTs on late night television. I have more to say about that than perhaps is healthy. So all of that is coming up soon. You're not gonna wanna miss it. Before you don't miss it though, hit the like button, share the stream so that everybody knows that we're live. And with that said, Nina Turner, are you ready to talk about a whole bunch of nonsense?
Ready to go.
Okay, because unfortunately that's all I've got for you. Okay, let's do this. There are any number of different stories involving Joe Biden, who you're seeing right beside me, that I would love to be talking about the show today. Maybe even leading off the show as we are. It could be some sort of executive order or action that shows that he's not gonna let the filibuster stop him from achieving his goals. He's going to fulfill his promises and make good on blah, blah, blah. Or maybe it would be actually pressuring those who are upholding the filibuster in whatever way, even if it's futile, showing that he cares. But we don't have that, and don't really have him doing anything. He doesn't seem to be up to much today or this week, probably this month, maybe this term. So what do we have for you? Well, all we're left with in this hellscape that should be a democracy is this.
Do you think you play political liability?
That's a great asset. More inflation. What a stupid son of a bitch.
That's what we've got. Joe Biden caught on a hot mic calling it's Peter Ducey, right? Steve Ducey's son, a dumb son of a bitch, which, you know, we can get into the merits of that classification, Nina, but this is the big story domestically in politics today, probably for a solid day, maybe two. Joe Biden swore to a reporter. What do you think?
Well, you know, as someone who uses a little colorful language myself every now and then, hey, the president and I agree on using colorful language when the need arises. As you know, John, I've used some colorful language in the public square myself. So for all the haters out there that always like to remind me of that colorful language, I'm just going to play this. I'm just going to roll this clip, John. So for me, this is beautiful. This is a thing of beauty.
Yeah. Look, it probably wouldn't even, like, on any average like Cenk Uygur rant, it's not even gonna be one of the top five worst things he calls somebody involved in politics, and rightfully so. That said, Joe Biden is a little bit different than a Nina Turner, a Cenk Uygur. I mean, he's in DC, he's supposed to be very responsible and there's decorum and all that. And so he called him dumb son of a bitch, and that means that now, in the absence of all that stuff I alluded to in the beginning, because after all, I can't give you an update on him canceling student loan debt because he's just not doing it. I can't give you an update on much of anything substantive. Now, the media apparatus, like, can you imagine how happy they are at the news cycle that they just got? Because conservatives can be very aggrieved about this. I mean, how dare he? It's personal and it's profane and it's an attack on the press. They can pretend that they care about politicians attacking the press. And on the other side, they can defend Biden. Yeah, he's being folksy, he's being a regular person. He's saying something I might, maybe I wanna have a beer with him and none of any of that. And look, some of it might be interesting. We'll engage in a little bit of it. None of it has anything to do with anything that will actually affect anybody's life. So it's entertaining or whatever, but it's a little bit depressing that another day of news that could have been, that was ripe with possibility, will effectively become the Masked Singer for a day.
Well, John, what's profane, and I definitely agree with you, is the condition by which the poor, the working poor, and the barely middle class have to endure in this country right now. That's profane. I mean, the child tax credits have expired. How about we talk about that? We got two Democratic senators that said, nope, not going to cooperate. Let the filibuster run wild, baby, and hold up any opportunities to expand and protect access to the ballot box. I mean, we, John, you and I can really think of some really profane things happening in this country right now that will not be dealt with. And you know what else is profane, John? Also, the pretending, the facade that is in Washington, that people are going to be prim and proper. They're not. Mm-hmm. So I think for me on the other side of this, you know, he called it as he was thinking it in his mind, but we always pick and choose who is acceptable to say something like that, because you're right, it'll be called folksy and down, I want to be down and all of that good stuff by one side, and then there'll be pearl clutching on the other side. I just want folks to remember that when Sister Turner used some colorful language, don't come at me with it, because I'm just going to roll that. I'm making this all about me right now. Don't come at me with that, because I'm just gonna roll this tape.
Exactly. And I agree with you that they decide who gets to be profane, definitely.
Yeah.
But also, like, and this may be a little bit less explicit, who you can be profane about. Biden, he can say that about Ducey, because who cares about Ducey? I don't think Ducey cares about Ducey. Nobody cares about that. He's not saying that about Manchin. He's not saying that about Sinema. He's not saying that about people who you're not supposed to denigrate. You're supposed to wine and dine them, bring them over, have lunch with them, try to court them. And yet, if there's anybody that he should be using that language about, it's the people who are like single or double-handedly annihilating his entire agenda. Let's get a dumb son of a bitch targeting Joe Manchin. How about that?
John, oh my God, you really hit on something there. Who you can say that kind of thing about. You know, when I made a statement about the neoliberalism compared to neo-fascism, it was like, oh my God, that Nina Turner, you know, off with her head, she's banished. So you are absolutely right. You hitting the sore spot right there, John, but it is true. It depends on what the media, the elites in the United States of America, the elites that run the system, they determine who's worthy of being called, you know, names and who is not. So your point is absolutely well taken. I mean, John, you have some people tell the story. That was the worst thing I could have done in life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There
are, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Like, people heard you say that and they are still just in their shower on the ground, water raining down on them, sobbing because they can't get past the things you said. And that's what you did to them, Nina Turner.
That's what I did. Yeah.
That's what you did. Okay, let's turn to a slightly different aspect on this. So Joe Biden called Ducey a dumb son of a bitch.
I don't know if I want to lead this, John. I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm messing.
I'm kidding. None of that happens. Let's get some of the reactions to what Joe Biden said. Everybody is very aggrieved. Although interestingly, the closer you are to the insult, the less you seem to care. The more distant, the more egregious it seems. Brian Stelter, and by the way, it was in response to a question about inflation. The question don't matter. Brian Stelter says, calling a journalist a son of a bitch, it was wrong when Trump was just a candidate, and it's even worse now that he's POTUS. Yes, okay, that's like fine. Yes, neither should do it, I guess, or whatever. I want people to be worried about freedom of the press and the aggressive approach most politicians have to it. And I'm not saying that this can't be a part of it. I don't feel like this is core to that though. When they're talking about changing the libel laws and stuff, or when they're trying to like extradite people who like blew whistles and stuff, that's like the core of it. And if you're good on that stuff, go crazy about the dumb son of a bitch comment. That's what I think. But if you don't care about the core stuff, if you're not worried about that, or conglomerations buying up all local media, an entire state, and the fact that newsrooms can't afford to hire an actual journalist, and nobody knows anything about what's going on in other countries. If you don't care about that stuff, don't give me your tears about the son of a bitch comment. That's what I think.
Amen.
So that's Stelter. We have Jim Banks, Republican, who says, have we ever seen a president attack and malign the free press like Joe Biden had?
Yes.
Wait, just, who, Nina?
I mean, I'm old enough to remember a man by the name of Donald J. Trump. Are you kidding? See, this faux outrage, down to your point, it just makes no sense whatsoever. Are we in the Twilight Zone? Yeah, we are. John, we visit the Twilight Zone too often, in my opinion. Yeah,
we're in the Twilight Zone now. At the end of the show, we're actually going to be in Black Mirror. So get ready for that. We're in a dystopia of one form or another. I'm not even gonna read the graphics. I was just gonna focus on Trump's obsession with Yamiche Alcindor. Like just her individually, he said way more than this.
He did. Yeah.
Let alone all of it. And anyway, so
but part of this is a facade that is put up in political circles that everybody must be prim and proper to be acceptable. Mm-hmm. See, so we're fighting against this false facade. People are human, and a lot of humans curse or cuss. Mm-hmm. Where I come from, baby, it's called just cussing. You're going to get a good cussing out. So at that moment, that is how President Biden felt. And he said that part, what he was thinking, came out of his mouth. Okay, next question.
Exactly. Can I ask you a super fast question, actually? You said next question. Here's a question for you. Was it a hot mic? I mean, obviously, it was a hot mic. The mic was on. Did he not know that that would be broadcast? What do you think? Am I being conspiratorial?
No, it was a hot moment. Hell, forget the hot mic. It was a hot moment. He knew the mic was on. Jesus.
Yeah. Okay, that's sort of what I suspected. Yeah. But anyway, you know what? To stay on Yamiche for 1 second, calling someone a dumb son of a bitch, this is a profane or whatever. Responding to a question about white nationalism by saying, that's a very racist question. Be nice, don't be threatening. Those are not the same thing. Like they're both sparring with a reporter, but they feel different to me, Nina.
They are different, and we can't allow people to conflate, you know, bad people on both sides or good people on both sides. That's what they're doing when they bring those two things together. They don't go together, and there is a difference. Now, being cussed at or cursed at, is being cussed at, but certain questions and certain situations are not the same thing.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's go to as close as I care to get to those who were so gravely insulted by what Joe Biden did. Here is a little bit from Fox and Friends this morning talking about it.
So the president picked up the phone, called him back. And am I right, Steve, at the end of it? He said, you know, I got to ask you different questions. And he said, yeah, that's, you know, I understand that's your job. I want you to do that.
Right. The president said, hey, Peter, nothing personal, pal. So I guess they're pals, despite what he had said earlier, which did seem pretty personal in that kind of attack or use, at least by using those words. And he said, and Peter said, Mr. President, I just want you to know I am always going to ask different questions. And the president reportedly told Peter, according to Peter on Hannity last night, he said, well, you got it. And so Peter Ducey will continue to ask those questions despite the president saying stuff.
So, okay, Biden reached out to him and reassured him that there's no hard feelings or whatever. And don't worry, Peter's strong. He can take it. He's going to ask those tough questions. Ugh, so stupid.
Yeah, Chris, cry me a river on that. That's just, again, more theater. Hell, he's a reporter. They're accustomed to being, have to be sometimes rough and tumble, you know, with the White House, with politicians. I mean, it just happens. Peter's going to be all right. Yeah, Pumpkin is going to be all right.
Yeah, he's gonna have in 10 years, he's gonna have a nighttime show on Fox. He's gonna become, you know, 500% more fascist than he is now, and he's gonna be richer than I'll ever be in my life. He's gonna be fine. Anyway, finally, really fast, because they did that whole like damage control thing for him. He's always gonna ask different questions. And Biden, he just like responded negatively to a different question. Like, that's not 100% wrong. Biden didn't seem to like the question, which was basically just, when are you gonna answer a question about inflation? Do you think inflation will hit the midterms? But can we pause for a second and not act as if that question is some sort of like amazing example of journalistic bravery? Oh dear, you asked the president if inflation is gonna affect the midterms 9 months from now? Yeah, you're finally cutting through all the nonsense of DC and hitting the things that really affect people. No, that's the most obvious sort of nonsensical opposition question ever. Fine, ask it, and Biden should answer it. But that is totally in line with accepted discourse. That is not some sort of thinking outside the box moment from my point of view.
No, it's true. It's one of those, the technical term is called duh. One of those moments. Yeah. Inflation impacting the midterm election.
Man, it's a big two hit to Ducey. First he gets called a dumb son of a bitch, and now he just turns like duh. Okay, Nina, let's do this thing. The committee investigating January 6th is continuing with their work. And maybe you have high expectations for what they'll find out or any consequences that might come. I don't personally have that, but feel free. That said, Republicans are already gearing up for their counterattack. Even though nothing has yet really come from the committee meeting, is burning the right. And they're ready to come in there and investigate the investigators. Newt Gingrich, who at one point was a really important Republican, now he's a Fox News contributor. He said recently, I think when you have a Republican Congress, this is all going to come crashing down. And the wolves are gonna find out that they're now sheep. They're the ones who are, in fact, I think, face a real risk of jail for the kinds of laws they're breaking. I am assuming he then went on to explain specifically what laws the January 6th committee is supposedly breaking. It's bad. We shouldn't have cut that statement off because we're probably leaving off a lot of evidence or whatever. But look, it's not just him on the right. Even newcomers are grasping at this. John Gibbs, who's like a MAGA styled primary challenger on the Republican side, said Speaker Newt Gingrich is correct. That's why if I'm elected, together with my new colleagues like Joe Kent, I'll make sure those who abuse their office to target political opponents via the January 6th committee are held accountable. I would like to give John Gibbs a couple of bonus points for not just promising retribution to his political opponents, but saying he's doing it specifically because he does not accept people abusing their office to target political opponents. A little bit of fun irony sprinkled on top of there. But neither of them are currently holding office. Matt Gaetz, at least as of now, is. And he echoed Newt Gingrich while also lumping in his own legal problems in this clip.
And a cutout seems like exactly what they were trying to do to me. There's a guy named Steve Alford who's sitting in prison right now for trying to extort me, but he was not acting alone. Very likely he was answering to a cutout, someone like Bob Kent, to try to destroy me. Because you know what? Newt's right. We are going to take power. And when we do, it's not going to be the days of Paul Ryan and Trey Gowdy where the Republicans go limp wristed, where they lose their backbone and fail to send a single subpoena. No, it's going to be the days of Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. And you know what? We're going to get answers, real answers about what happened in the election, answers about the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and certainly answers about a Department of Justice and a national security apparatus that has gone totally off the rails. They have become the enforcement wing of the Democratic Party. The entire country knows it. And you know what? We need honest, fair, real application of the laws in our country. We're not getting that now. And frankly, we weren't really getting it at the DOJ under President Trump. There's a lot of swamp left to be drained, and I can't wait to get the gavels in our hands, to get the subpoenas ready to go, and to get these answers for the American people.
So there, Nina, he makes very clear that on a long list of conspiracy laden topics, from his own personal issues with the legal accusations he's facing to something with Russia, something with Wuhan, January 6th, they're gonna be coming for people. What do you think?
I'm trying to get over the phrase limp wristed. Is that what he said?
Yep.
I'm stuck. I'm stuck right there, John. Right there. The folks involved in January 6th tried to overthrow the outcome of the election, tried to overthrow the government by force. People got hurt. People got killed. Law enforcement officers who they claim to care so much about. Lives were at risk. Other elected officials and just other people in and around the Capitol. So give me a break. But you know what the Republicans are doing, John? They laying it out, all of what they will do when they get in power. So it will not be to try to make the lives of the American people better. It will be a revenge tour. So let me further know that the Democrats need to deliver something so that the Republicans do not get back in control, because they telling us the whole playbook right there. So we can't say we didn't know, because they laid it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's so much like dishonesty in DC. I appreciate a little bit of honesty. I think he is right. And I think while I hope that Matt Gaetz is not representative of all Republican congressmen because of, you know, his whole thing. In this area, I do think, that's what they all want. They're promising that when he gets in office for the rest of that congressional term and probably the rest of the Biden administration, our entire government, the only output of it will be committee hearings about, I don't know, Russiagate or the Ukraine impeachment. Like, it's just going to be that. And the thing that bothers me about that so much isn't necessarily that like they're gonna be locking up Nancy Pelosi or whatever, because it's a lot of it is based on absolutely nothing and they don't control the DOJ. It's that, and this goes out to any conservatives who might be watching the show right now. I bet you loved what Matt Gaetz just said. I bet you are hoping, why can't we have Republicans in charge that'll do these hearings? I want more Benghazi hearings, but and you have been trained to want that, trained to love it. Is it gonna help you with your mortgage? Is it gonna help you with retirement? Is it gonna help your kids go to college? If you face medical bankruptcy, how much better off will you be economically if they really grill Shifty Schiff in a hearing? No, really, like they are promising, this is what we're gonna give you. Matt Gaetz is not promising a return to fiscal discipline and thoughtful conservative legislation. He is telling you loud and clear, you're not getting anything except theater. And that is what you want. That's sort of the rub. The only thing you want is lib tears. And the only thing they'll give you is lib tears. And meanwhile, the country falls apart and people fall behind, Nina.
That's it. Let's not deal with climate chaos. Let's not deal with the lived experiences of most Americans. Let's not even deal with the fact that the pandemic is still raging and will have implications for us for the rest of our lives. Let's not deal with any of that. But we're gonna hold a revenge tour. We're gonna do a lot of hearings. That's what we got in store for you. Get nothing done in Congress per usual.
Exactly. Well, look, Matt Gaetz might want to focus a little bit more on his own situation, which is dragging out. It's unfortunate, but that's the way the system works, I guess. Reports now say that his allies are quietly isolating him as the sex trafficking investigation nears its end. And the way that that's manifested, first of all, when you talk to his allies, some seem to disagree on this, but his ability to like get co-sponsors on bills he's interested or whatever is apparently much more difficult now. So I don't know how much he cares about that. I don't think he cares if people are a bit short with him in committee hearings. And this is about the extent that any sort of Republican strike back, even the most casual form, has actually come in. There's nothing more formal than this, no censure, no anything like that. But just in case you have been missing some of the developments in this case, earlier this month, Gaetz's ex-girlfriend testified before a federal grand jury. She could be a key witness in the Justice Department's probe into whether Gaetz violated federal sex trafficking laws and obstructed justice. But despite all of that and everything, they're totally sticking with him, the right, probably because Donald Trump loves him so much. GOP leaders haven't called on him to resign, stripped him of his committee assignments. The GOP leadership offices also ignored questions about what might actually lead them to do that. Like if there is a big interview that looks really bad, or charges, or an indictment, or a criminal conviction, Would any of that get you to literally require anything out of Matt Gaetz? And they will not say, even to the point of a criminal conviction for sex trafficking, they will not go on the record as saying, well, obviously that would cross a line. I feel like that should at the very least be a line, even in America of 2022.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I mean, if they want to sit back and say, let the investigation continue, we'll make a decision afterward. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. But what if the investigation determines that he is, you know, found to have committed these acts? And like you said, if he's found guilty, I mean, what is it going to take for them? We are in bizarro land for sure.
Yeah, definitely. That's certainly the way it feels. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to very different stuff. Across America, the right is done with CRT. And they were done before they even found out what it was. That's convenient. But in their quest to stop critical race theory from being taught anywhere, including all of the places that it has literally never been taught before, what do you know? Other stuff is now getting canceled because of fears about what the right might do next. So we want to talk about a Florida school district that has canceled a professor's history seminar that they were going to do on the history of the civil rights movement. That has now been canceled. So this is going to be given by J. Michael Butler, who is a history professor, at least as of now. Maybe by the time the story is done, he won't be a professor anymore. I don't know. At Flagler College in St. Augustine, scheduled to give a presentation Saturday on what's called the Long Civil Rights Movement, which postulates that the civil rights movement preceded and postdated Martin Luther King Jr. by decades, that we shouldn't constrain our focus on the movement to a decade long period or whatever, but acknowledge the work that was done in terms of organization, activism, as well as academia for decades longer. He said that he was shocked to learn why the seminar had been canceled through an email Wednesday, but that he wasn't surprised because educators feel increasingly intimidated over teaching about race. He says he hadn't shared his full presentation with the school district. In that, he doesn't mention critical race theory, structural racism, or anti-racism. It is just an overview of the history, but it involves civil rights, it involves Black history, it involves famous, influential Black Americans. So just to be safe, Nina, let's not have any of that, I guess. That is the position of that school district.
Yeah, these people are crazy. Let's just cancel history, period. Let's not talk about anything that happened in history that disrupts the way that these folks want us to be socialized in this country. Let's just go ahead and cancel history altogether. I mean, John, it is literal nonsense. And then you don't want the man to have a seminar for other educators about actually what went down in the United States of America that has absolutely nothing to do with critical race theory. We knew that this was going to happen. It's critical race theory is used as a ruse to not talk about anything that upset these people's sensibilities about this country. Well, guess what? We got to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, the ridiculous, the asinine, the destructive. And that's just part of America's history, John. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't founded on a bed of roses. And even if it was, roses have thorns. Hello, somebody. No. It was formed by stealing the land from the Native American, period, mm-hmm. indigenous peoples. It was formed and built to the hegemon nation that it is today on the back of the enslaved. Those are the facts. Women didn't get the right to vote, treated as extension of children. Only white male land owning, i.e. ultra wealthy white men, had a say for the longest time in this nation's history. Yep. And oh yeah, people were fighting for their civil rights from the beginning, period. Black folks was rocking with that from the beginning. So John, I don't even understand, where is the mystery in this?
I mean, I don't think there's mystery. There's just a desire for kids to not understand anything that you just said. They don't want it.
Wow. It's something wrong with these folks, John. Can I use some colorful language to describe them? I know my mic hot, baby. It's hot.
The Florida legislature is full of, and this has been known for a long time, a bunch of dumb sons of bitches. I'm just gonna say it. And don't come at me. Come at Brandon. Don't he said come. It first. Don't anyway, come. Yeah, no, it's look, and by the way, they're coming for history right now. Not critical race theory, history, understanding context, an understanding of what our country was and is. But let's also bear in mind, I wish I could credit the individual who reminded me of this on Twitter, but someone pointed out this is hardly the first time that the right has taken this up as a substitute for a couple of years of having to do anything to benefit their voters. After all, one of the big ones was, you remember the big debate about intelligent design around the country? Yeah. Now, a lot of people viewing this might not really be familiar with that or why it was a political thing, because the right doesn't talk about it. But for years, they did not want anything about evolution to be taught. It was what you're supposed to teach is intelligent design, the idea that evolution doesn't function through natural selection, but through some higher power. I mean, we're not saying it's the Christian God, but it's obviously the Christian God. And that effectively tamped down the freedom of speech of biology professors across a wide swath of things, because evolution isn't something that you cover for 1 week in a biology class. It affects every single thing. So they came for biology, you know, when like can't talk about climate science, they come for that. They're coming now for history. This is what they do. Now that doesn't make it any less threatening to know that this is hardly a new thing, but we should understand in that context. And perhaps there's lessons that can be drawn from these past experiences.
Yeah, no, thanks for that.
Our understanding history. Yeah.
No, thanks for that reminder, John. I am old enough to remember. And those things don't have to be mutually exclusive. I mean, there are people who do believe, I'm one of them, who believe that there is a higher power. I also believe that the higher power created science. So for me, these two things go together. And I think for a lot of people, they go together. But yes, I absolutely remember when they tried to cancel evolution.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'll even side with you. I think that if you can conceive of a higher power, you can conceive of a higher power who would start things off and allow natural selection to function. I don't understand why that's so difficult to understand. Seems consistent. He's really powerful. He created everything. Anyway, he can create sex selection theoretically. So anyway, understand there's going to be more of this. You know, less than 24 hours before the professor we just talked about learned that his speech had been canceled, a Senate committee advanced legislation at the behest of Ron DeSantis to block public schools and private businesses from making people feel, quote, discomfort when they're taught about race. Because again, facts don't care about your feelings unless the feeling is discomfort, in which case, damn the facts, light them up. Anyway, the legislation, I'm gonna give you more details because I hate you. The legislation would prohibit individuals from making people to, quote, feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress on account of his or her race, color, sex, or national origin. It would also prohibit employers from providing training or instruction that espouses, promotes, advances, inculcates, or compels individuals to believe that an individual bears responsibility for or should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment because of actions committed in the past by other members of the same race, color, sex, or national origin. Which, by the way, they add in to make it seem less like we're just trying to stop white people from ever being marginally uncomfortable. Because that thing about like being made to feel as if you bear responsibility right now and should be punished for what people did in the past is not how school works. It's not how critical race theory works, not how any of this works. They just don't want you to find out about the past. It is really as simple as that.
And it's not even happening, John. I just can't with these people. I mean, I could just explode right now, just spontaneously combust right now. This stuff is maddening, it's sickening. And it is going to hurt this country. It's going to hurt the not just the young people who they're trying to socialize in a way, because this is social engineering right here that they're trying to pull off. The history is the history. You want to talk about discomfort? How uncomfortable do you think it was to be enslaved? How uncomfortable do you think it was to have folks come over here and take your land? How uncomfortable is it to prop up systems that still propagate racism and discrimination? You want to talk about uncomfortable? John, I'm sick of these people. It's crazy. And the masses need people need to rise up and say enough is enough. We're not going to play these games. Tell Florida, you better get your guy. because he's embarrassing you now. We need to go ahead and learn the history, everybody. Women's history, gay rights history, all of the history. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And guess what? There is some good too.
Yeah.
But we can't just pretend like these tragedies, these horrific things were not done even before we became the United States of America. And they're still being done now. What is wrong with this? Florida, come get your guy. Get your man.
Yep. Get him before he's embarrassing the whole country in a couple of years. Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, we're gonna do that little roundup on what's going on with workers in a couple different areas of the American economy. That's coming up in just a few. Okay, everybody needs to buckle up because we are gonna cover a whole bunch of important stuff in what remains of this hour. Imagine being asked to work for free, not just for a few hours or a day, but for hour and hour, hour after hour after hour. Well, many of those who are gonna be very important in getting the Super Bowl set up to film. And by the way, it's only gonna be a few miles from here. I live within 1 mile of it, are being asked to do just that. And we wanna give you the details. Field cast participants, which include aspiring dancers, actors, singers, and musicians recruited from local drill teams, as well as theatrical community and athletic groups, are expected to be grateful for the once in a lifetime opportunity. But the situation is causing a stir in the dance community. One dance artist, Taja Riley, said, "I think that in a performance that is going to highlight predominantly African American movers, African American recording artists, and African American culture, Inglewood Stand Up, I think this is the opportunity to really step up and do something about this." She also said, "This is way bigger than the Super Bowl. This is another example of the systemic problem in the dance industry where we feel we are being bullied to pony up by participating for exposure only or face being blacklisted if we speak out." And she finally said, 400 predominantly unpaid black workers during Black History Month with black creators and black artists. This is unacceptable. Whether it's one volunteer or 400, every single person working in the most profitable event of the year should be paid. And I am assuming, Nina, it will be incredibly profitable, both for the teams and the organization, but for Inglewood as well. That is going to bring in a lot of money.
You think, John? You think that might happen? Yeah, I think you're right. No, Ms. Riley, I mean, she hit the nail on the head. It is wrong to ask any of the artists to perform for free for hours on hours on hours. And they have the money to do it. So why not spread the love? Why is there a problem with spreading the love to the essential folks? And in that situation, they are very much essential to the entire picture that they're trying to paint. So it's wrong and they got the money. So just, I hate to say, John, just do the right thing. Because sometimes folks don't just do the right thing.
No. No, not unless there is pressure put on them. And that is,
right. You
know, sometimes that feels like that's the only power we have, the only chance that we have. But we do have that. So we will try to make sure that you know, and you know, that first of all, that they know that they're being seen, that their concerns are being heard, even if by people who aren't involved in the process, but that those who are can know that we expect better of them. And not just about those workers, those hundreds of workers. We want to remind you, Alabama coal miners who were striking for a long time, months last year, have continued. They're still out there. About 1,100 coal miners in Alabama have entered 2022 still on strike. More than 10 months since they walked out back in April last year, making it the longest strike in the US since the COVID-19 pandemic began and the longest in Alabama's history. But in large parts of the South, you're not supposed to learn history anymore, so I guess they're gonna ignore that point. But these are coal workers, more than 1,000 for almost a full year, and they are almost never acknowledged, almost never spoken about. And it doesn't seem as if the warrior met coal is seemingly any closer to caring, let alone giving them what they feel like they deserve after what they've done during the pandemic and before it.
And God bless these striking workers. I just want to remind folks that when our sisters and brothers and family and friends go out on strike, they don't get their paycheck. You know, they don't have access to the wages, the benefits, any of that. They are making a huge personal sacrifice, bringing that sacrifice to the collective lens by doing it together in hopes of pushing and forcing a company to do better by wages and work conditions. And John, I mean, this would be a great time for the PRO Act. How about that? Mm-hmm. That we hear nothing about. You want to talk about profanity? You remember we were talking about profanity before? Well, I think it's profane that the PRO Act has not passed yet.
Yep.
You know, I just.
Nina, I'm sure that Manchin and Sinema do value the PRO Act and they want it to pass. They just value the filibuster more. That's all. Add that to the list of things that the filibuster is more valuable than. And you know, like again, those are two corrupt individuals. We can't move them, but like it's amazing to me that the right refuses to even acknowledge literal coal workers who feel like they've been abused. Can you earn your populism once a year? Do one segment to buy yourself the right to continue calling yourself a populist. How about that? That's the Tucker Carlson challenge for 2022. Acknowledge the miners. How about that?
Yeah.
By the way, the miners have protested there. They protested in New York. They literally took it to the media to make it easier. And there was a little bit of coverage at that point. Mm-hmm. Apparently, as of just the 2nd of November, the strike has cost the company $6.9 million. But they'd rather just lose millions and millions of dollars than give it to the workers who are earning it.
And this is where government needs to step in, you know, where the referee really needs to step in and put the full weight and pressure on companies like this to do right by the very people who are the lifeblood of them being able to make the profits that they do. I mean, I really don't get this. This corrupting, excessive greed. I just don't get it. You could be profitable and treat your employees well. Those two things can go together too. And when you think about the backbreaking work of mining coal, John, maybe
can't imagine.
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
It's not just you. I can promise you that at least.
It's numbing. It's numbing. The exploitation that these companies are allowed to do and then bribe elected officials all along the way. This is what we're talking about. Systemic. This is an answer. This is systemic and it is corrupting. And when political forces won't step in because they care more about their owner donors and not those miners and their families. And the economy that it is disrupting as well.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with everything you just said. Regrettably, you used the word systemic. So the show has now been canceled in Florida. So yeah, we valued our Florida audience, but I guess we don't have any more. Sorry about that. Oh. Thanks, Nina. Anyway, no, you're totally right. Two more quick updates for you. One is that, and this is not an area that I think gets a lot of media focus, but older workers have continued to suffer incredibly during the pandemic. Those who are relatively close to retirement, but not yet in a position or able to retire. Some 5.7 million workers aged 55 or older lost their jobs in the US back in March and April of 2020. 15% of workers in age demographic that was also experiencing the vast majority of COVID-19 deaths at the same time. The unemployment rate for workers aged 65 and older hit a record rate of 7.5% back in 2020. And you know, even to this point now, it is difficult for some of them to find work. The Guardian profiled one individual, 61-year-old substitute art teacher named Elaine Simmons. She said, is from the Seattle, Washington area. Was on a 10-month contract, hoping to settle into a more permanent role at the school where she was teaching when the pandemic hit. And now she says, I'm still too young to retire. I'm looking for a dream job. I want my permanent job. I want to be fully set for my pension and my social security, but isn't in that point, can't afford to actually retire. And so that's not an area that, again, I think it's focused on a lot, but that's millions of workers who haven't necessarily recouped all of the losses of the pandemic. And are in a very difficult position where they only have a little bit more time to save and feel set to retire if and when they ever get to retire at this point. And I'm sure the pandemic will stop many of them from ever achieving that.
And I'm glad you're highlighting this type of story, especially John. Ageism is a real thing. And depending on what type of job or jobs you have worked in your life over the course of your life, you may or may not have enough to even do well during retirement. I mean, we know a lot of elders still have to work even after they get their social security. So there is something wrong with that. And you know what? What we're talking about right now in this specific case it doesn't have to be, just because it is right now, it doesn't have to be the reality moving forward. We got to do something about
100%.
This.
I agree. We're going to show you an instance of absolute horrendous police misconduct and violence. We're going to show you a video, but I want to let you know ahead of time that it is graphic. So with that said, feel free to click away. Here is what happened. That video that you just saw that we acquired from the Lake Worth Police Department shows a Lake Worth police officer, Jonathan Granato, striking Dustin Bates with his vehicle. And a lawsuit was filed just yesterday against this former police officer, accusing him of running Dustin over back in November of 2020. Now, as you can imagine, that's going to do a lot of damage to a person. That's what any reasonable person would expect. If you're a cop and you don't want to have to chase after anyone, then what do you care? I guess you just run them down. But anyway, that caused Dustin Bates to suffer 3 fractured ribs, a broken right leg, and a fractured spine. Bates was later charged with evading arrest and drug possession, but the charges were dismissed in August at prosecutorial discretion. Granato resigned from the department in December of last year. So he actually hung around for about 1 year after that event. During a press conference just yesterday, Lake Worth Police Chief JT, and I'm not even gonna try, said that Granato tried to brake, but his vehicle slid on the wet grass and struck Bates at about 45 miles per hour. Granato had previously been suspended from the force for unsafe operation of his vehicle. That's just context. Feel free to think that that's relevant or not, that he had already done things like this. Anyway, they said that the video of the Bates incident showed him that Granato used poor judgment. Well, yes, clearly. Now look. Is it impossible that he hit his brakes? I don't know. I try to be reasonable to an extent that I often will give way too much credence to arguments made in fundamental bad faith. But I can say you were aimed at him. You certainly didn't seem to think that the worst possible outcome, the outcome that must be avoided at all costs, was not hitting him. That didn't seem to be your thought process. Even if you had been able to hit the brakes and stopped, did you need to be in line to strike him? Could you not have gone ahead of him? Could you not have pursued him on foot afterward? The evidence seems to indicate the intent to strike this person. As people are saying in the chat, the fact that you drove off the road in the first place, the fact that you led your target. I understand the concept of target fixation, but there's a lot here that would make me think it didn't seem like you were actively trying to avoid this guy. And it is, by the way, hardly the first instance, the first video we've shown you of cops running people down with their vehicles, slamming them into other objects with their vehicles and those sorts of things. Well, he now has health problems for the rest of his life. You don't easily bounce back from broken ribs and a fractured spine and all that. He said, I was just trying to get out of the way of the patrol car, and now I'm in pain every day. And by the way, let's file this along with so many other instances where, what if we didn't have the video? What if you had just read a headline that Dustin Bates was struck by a vehicle and that's it? He was evading arrest and he was struck. I tried to stop. There would be no consideration of the evidence. There would be no looking at it and trying to get into the mind and figure out. There'd be none of that. You would just probably believe, or most people would believe, what the cop said. So again, thank God we at least have the videotape, even if the response from the cops is incredibly defensive and they still say that he was trying to slow down and all of that. So look, it is obviously a dangerous world out there, and there's no consideration of the stakes, not from cops. There is an assumption that other people are inherently incredibly threatening, deadly threats. That's what they represent at all times. Whereas in this case, this is a guy who was evading arrest, was apparently wanted for drug possession. He was not fleeing a mass shooting that he had just committed. He was not wanted for terroristic threats, or I don't know, whatever. Input whatever you want. It's drugs. So again, what if it just wasn't illegal? What if we didn't set up this seeming like plausible entry into running someone down with your car? There's a lot of places where the system has failed people like Dustin Bates. I think this is an example of several of them.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.